Hello friends, now I'll talk about the HPLC method development. This is very important topic for academics as well as industry. I'm Pradeep Acharya. Now I'll start describing the HPLC method development. Analyte size and their polarities are the key factors for choosing a separation mode. Macromolecules, whether biomolecules or polymers, are generally separated in the exclusion mode. Affinity chromatography is particularly good for protein purification. For chiral separation, one must of course choose a chiral stationary phase. For separation and detection of low molecular weight ions, the ion chromatography is the method of choice. While weak acids and weak bases do not respond well to suppressed conductometry, the other detection methods following an ion exchange, ion interaction separation are often applicable. For all other low molecular weight analytes, the polarity is the key to choosing a separation mode as it influences both retention on a particular column and solubility in the mobile phase. Compound's polarity follows the approximate order of it is least for the hydrocarbons and its derivatives, and this polarity will increase in the order oxygenated hydrocarbons, proton donor, ionic compounds, that is RH, and it will increase to RX, RNO2, ROR, that means ethers, and again the polarity will increase for RCOR, that means esters. Again it will increase for ketones, RCOR, and then increasing polarity for RCHO, aldehydes, then amides, that means RCONHR, and again it will increase for the RNH2, R2NH, and R3N, that means amines, primary, secondary and tertiary. Again, it will increase for alcohols. The polarity increase for the alcohols, ROH. And then in increasing order, also H2O, AROH, that means phenols, RCOOH acids, and then nucleotides, also in increasing order of polarity. And the greatest polarity is for amino acids, that means RNH3, RCO2-, and above N, one plus charge is there. In amino acids, both plus and minus charge is there. We have to remember this, because in the whatever the attached the amine groups, that will take one proton from the carboxylic group to make it deuterions. In both the normal phase chromatography and helic chromatography, the stationary phase is polar. In the normal phase chromatography, a non-polar mobile phase is used, such as N-hexane, dichloromethane, or chloroform. predominantly non-polar or low polarity analytes which are soluble in these mobile phase, that means in hexane, dichloromethyl or chloroform, or the like type of phase, mobile phase. These are separated based on their degree of polarity. More polar compounds are retained longer. Very hydrophilic analytes, however, do not dissolve in normal phase chromatography mobile phase. They cannot be separated on a reverse phase either. Many drugs and biological metabolites fall in this class. The helix in such case is an attractive separation mode. Both the stationary and the mobile phase are polar. Mobile phase means typically acid nitrile water systems. More hydrophilic compounds are retained longer. Water is the strong solvent in helix chromatography, and separation are typically performed with a high initial concentration of acetonitrile to achieve retention and then increasing the order content. The helix method development can be challenging for the novice because of the wide variety of stationary phase available and the variety of interaction modes between analytes and this phase. A successful helix separation is critically dependent on the injected sample being introduced in a solution that is equivalent to or weaker than the initial mobile phase composition, as for example high acetonitrile content. Otherwise, poor peak shapes results. The helix columns are available today both on silica and polymer substrate and a variety of functionalities. That means deuter ionic, strong cation exchanger, strong anion exchanger, diol, etc. Analytes in reverse phase chromatography are separated based on their degree of hydrophobicity. A wide range of organic compounds can dissolve in the mixed water organic solvent phase and be separated. So the reverse phase chromatography is the most popular form of HPLC. The mobile phase is typically methanol or acetonitrile containing various amounts of water. Tetrahydrofuran is also used as the organic solvent, but less commonly. All of these solvents are sufficiently transparent in the UV to permit UV detection. In contrast to gas chromatography, where the carrier gas has little influence on the separation, in HPLC, the eluent greatly influences the separation, and this is much easier to change than changing columns. Optimizing the mobile phase composition is part of developing an HPLC separation method. In most applications, a pure solvent is not useful. A blend of two or more solvents is typically used. The weak and the strong solvents are designated the A and B solvents. Typically, trial and error can be used to obtain an optimum solvent composition for isocratic elution or the changes in percent B with time in a gradient elution protocol. Sometimes the available software programs that predict the retention on given columns with given eluent composition. In that case, we can use this software in lieu of the trial and error methods. The two parameters of interest are the retention factor K, that means a capacity term, and the separation factor alpha, that means a selectivity term. That capacity factor and selectivity factor I already discussed previously. Generally, one tries to adjust the solvent strength to position all solute bands within a K range of about 1 to 10. Adjusting for retention in this window may provide adequate resolution for many compounds. With protolyzable analytes, the chromatographic behavior of the protonated and unprotonated forms varies considerably. One must consider the addition of acids, base, and buffers to the mobile phase for pH adjustment in order to obtain good peak shapes and accomplish the desired resolution. For many molecules of biological interest, buffering at a compatible pH is often mandatory. The buffer composition or pH may also be varied during a gradient run as part of a gradient elution protocol using a ternary or quaternary gradient. Gradient elution in HPLC is one of the most effective ways of separating several analytes with vastly differing retention times under isocratic conditions. In isocratic elution, there is generally poor resolution of peaks early in the chromatogram and broadening of peaks at the longer retention times. In RPC, the gradient is accomplished by increasing the fraction of the strong solvent, that means percent B, during the run. This allows weakly retained compounds to be eluted later and be better resolved than they would in isocratic elution, and longer retained ones to be eluted more quickly, giving a chromatogram with well-paced peak. With improved peak shapes and lower detection limits, since the band broadening is lessened. As in gas chromatography, the temperature programming, the gradient profile may be stepwise or be continuously changing. Typically, the total flow rate is held constant. The starting eluent should have a composition that rapidly eludes and resolves the first component. The eluent is then gradually altered to a composition that resolves the last peaks in a reasonable period. A price paid for gradient elution is that the column has to be re-equilibrated with the beginning solvent between runs. This tie typically requires flushing with 15 to 20 column volumes of the initial mobile phase. Ultimately, the practicing analyst is interested in accomplishing the desired separation with sufficient resolution in the shortest possible time. From these perspectives, the gradient elution may or may not always be better. The pharmaceuticals and biotech industry account for the major share of the HPLC market, followed by the food products and the chemical and petrochemical industries. In pharmaceuticals quality control, the analyst generally need to look for a few active ingredients in a tablet or formulation. Now I'll talk about the UHPLC and FastLC. Many analyses are of the same or similar samples of limited complexity. Isocratic separation can be successfully used for that case. Available equipments may dictate whether small particle size, high efficiency STM columns can be used at high linear velocities to achieve a fast separation. In addition, the total amount of solvent consumed can also be a factor, especially if an expensive eluent is used. From this standpoint, if the equipment permits, narrower bore columns are to be preferred. Where time is of the essence, then the ultra high performance liquid chromatography systems, or it is called UHPLC systems, are of value. As particles get smaller, then the Van Dimmer's equation, that H, that means plate height denoted by capital H versus the U, that means velocity plots, become flat at high flow rates because smaller particles are less resistant to mass transfer. That means the C term in the Van Dimmer equation decreased. I already explained Van Dimmer equation in this chapter, I think season 1. Please check this to understand the C term, which is related to the mass transfer, in better way. Note that SPP particles of 2.7 micrometer DP give smaller efficiency as STM particles, but at half the pressure, a big advantage. Longer columns can be used and faster flow rates can be used to shorten analysis time. In many cases, older generation HPLC systems, whose pressure is almost 6000 psi maximum, it can be used without having to invest in a UHPLC instrument. That means with HPLC system also, we can use this column, that means small size particles column, and whose pressure maximum it will be the 6000 psi. That HPLC system with that specific columns we can use to get the same efficiency of separation, almost same efficiency of separation as for UHPLC separation process. Now, open tabular liquid chromatography, in short it is called OTLC. While gas chromatography today is dominantly carried out in wall coated or functionalized open capillaries, this is not the case for liquid chromatography. Diffusion in the liquid phase is 10 to the power 3 to 10 to the 4 times slower, and the tube diameters need to be smaller by the square root of this factor. Efforts have been made for the last 30 years, but the difficulties in creating an active phase injection and detection in such small capillaries have made progress difficult. Nevertheless, the OTLC in capillaries as small as 800 nanometer radius has been successfully carried out. Now I'll discuss about the thin layer chromatography. Thin layer chromatography, in short it is called the TLC, it is a planar form of chromatography widely used for rapid qualitative analysis. It can also be used in a high performance mode, which in short is called HPTLC, high performance thin layer chromatography. Quantitative analysis is also possible, although the technique is most widely used for rapid screening. As for example, in a synthetic organic chemistry laboratory to check if the desired compound is being made and how many impurities there are. The stationary phase is a thin layer of finely divided sorbent supported on a glass or metal, in most cases it is aluminium or plastic sheet. Virtually any stationary phase used in HPLC can be used, provided a suitable binder can make it adhere well to the substrate. It differs with HPLC in that multiple samples can be simultaneously analyzed. The three stages of injection, separation, and detection in HPLC corresponds in TLC to sample spotting, plate development, and detection. In the simplest case, a pencil line is drawn horizontally towards the bottom of the plate, approximately 5 to 10 millimeter from the bottom. There is where one or more sample spot are applied. Typically 0.5 to 5 microliter samples are spotted onto the line at regular interval, approximately 20 millimeter apart, and these samples will be spotted with a micro pipette. The chromatogram is developed by placing the bottom of the plate or strip in the developing solvent. The solvent is drawn up the plate by capillary action, and the sample components move up the plate at different rates depending on their relative affinities for the mobile versus the stationary phase. Following development, the positions of the individual solute spots are noted. Different analytes move at a fraction of the rate of solvent movement. Each analyte is thus characterized by the RF values. RF means it is equal to the vertical distance solute moves divided by vertical distance solvent front moves. Where the distance are measured from the original position of the sample spot and the solvent front is a line across the plate. In case an analyte spot tails or is diffused, the position of maximum density is taken to be the post-development solute position. As with the retention factor in HPLC, the RF value is characteristic for a given stationary phase solvent combination. Few users or researchers today make their own TLC plates uniformly of commercial plates is generally good. However, when doing qualitative screening for a particular compound or a set of compounds, it is always a good idea to spot a particular plate on the same plate, that means singly or in a mixture, to compare the RF values of the components in the test sample. Now I'll talk about the stationary phase for TLC or HPTLC. Although essentially any HPLC stationary phase can be used in TLC, but some 80% of TLC applications involve an unmodified 60 angstrom pore size silica stationary phase. Such an unmodified phase sees very limited use in modern HPLC, and the remainder 20% of the TLC stationary phase comprise of cyanodiol amide or C18 modified silica and alumina, as well as cellulose. A typical TLC plate is 20 cm. Although often narrower sections may be cut and used. Commonly the sample can be applied on any edge of the plate, and the plate can be accordingly developed with that edge at the bottom, but some manufacturers also make plates with one area designated as the concentration zone. In such a case, the sample must be applied in this zone. Plates coded for good laboratory practice, that means GLP practice, also have specified direction of development. The mean particle size in TLC plates is 10 to 12 micrometer with a range of 5 to 20 micrometer. In HPTLC plates, mean size is 5 to 6 micrometer with a range of 4 to 8 micrometer. The sorbent layer thickness of TLC plates is typically 250 micrometer on glass and 200 micrometer on other substrates, while that on HPTLC plates is 100 to 200 micrometer. Preparative plates have layer thickness of 0.5 to 2 mm and permit preparative separation in the gram scale. The typical migration distance on a TLC plate is 10 to 15 cm, while it is significantly smaller in HPTLC plates at 3 to 6 cm. However, the HPTLC permits more efficient separation with typical plate heights of 12 micrometer compared to the 30 micrometer for a standard TLC plate. Although HPTLC plates are significantly more expensive, if a large number of analyses are to be conducted at a time, considering saving time, the use of HPTLC plates may be more attractive. In addition, since band broadening is significantly less, nearly 4 times as many samples can be analyzed on an HPTLC plates than on a TLC plate, and with better mass detection limit. Now we'll discuss about the mobile phase for TLC. In adsorption chromatography, as with pure silica or alumina stationary phase, the eluting power of solvents increase in the order of their polarities. As for example, from hexane to acetone to alcohol to water. The developing solvent should contain no more than 3 components, because mixed solvents tend to themselves migrate differently and themselves separate by chromatography as they move up the thin layer, causing a continual change in the solvent composition with distance on the plate. This may result in varying RF values depending on how far the spots are allowed to move up the plate. Minor variations in solvent composition and temporal or spatial variations in temperature may then cause major reproducibility problem in RF. However, with appropriate control development chambers, the reproducible solvent's gradient may be deliberately exploited. The development solvent must be of high purity. The presence of small amounts of water or other impurities can produce irreproducible chromatograms. Now I'll talk about the sample applications. Manual sample application with capillary micropipettes is usually performed for sample analysis. Sample volumes of 0.5 to 5 microliter can be applied on spots onto conventional layers without intermediate drying. The HPTLC plates can handle less sample, up to 1 microliter per shot is acceptable. If samples are very dilute and more is needed for detection or visualization, the sample may be repeatedly applied on the same spot after drying. More demanding qualitative, quantitative, and preparative analysis or separation are made possible only by automated instrumental sample applications using the spray-on technique. To take full advantage of the separation power and reproducibility of HPTLC, the precise automated positioning and sample dose is mandatory. At the high end, autosamplers are available, as for example from CAMAG, that requires no operator presence and can apply sample as spots by contact transfer or as a rectangular band by a spray on techniques, essentially using technology similar to that used in inkjet printers. The spray on technique permits sample application as bands or rectangles with volumes as little as 0.5 microliter to greater than 50 microliter. Starting zone sprayed on as narrow bands offer the best separation attainable. Application in the form of rectangle also allows precise application of large volumes without damaging the layer. Prior to chromatography, these rectangles are focused into narrow bands with a solvent of high elution strength. Now I'll discuss about the developing the chromatogram in TLC. A TLC development chamber can be as simple as a beaker covered with a watch glass. Detailed consideration, however, reveal a much more complex system. A TLC system, in fact, is the only chromatographic system where a solid, liquid, and gas phase all play a role in the overall chromatographic process. While the role of the gas phase is typically ignored, it can significantly influence the result of the separation. The standard TLC chromatogram development involves placing the plate in a chamber which contains a sufficient amount of developing solvents. The lower end of the plate is immersed several millimeters into the solvent, but not to the level of the sample application point. The solvent moves off the layer due to capillary force until the desired distance is reached. The establishment of equilibrium between the components of the developing solvent and the vapor phase is called chamber saturation. The composition of the gas phase can differ significantly from that of the developing solvent and depends on the relative vapor pressures of the different solvent components. In adsorption chromatography, in a closed chamber, the process occurs. Point number A, the dry stationary phase adsorbed molecules from the gas phase. This adsorptive saturation process also approach an equilibrium for silica and similar phase. In this process, the more polar gas phase components selectively transfer to the solid sorbent phase. Point number B, simultaneously the part of the sorbent already wet by the mobile phase interacts with the gas phase. This results in selective transfer of the less polar components of the mobile phase to the gas phase. Unlike the point number A, this process is more governed by sorption equilibria than by vapor liquid equilibria. Now point number C, during migration, the components of the mobile phase can themselves be potentially separated by the stationary phase, causing the formation of secondary fronts. With the exception of a one component developing solvent, the terms developing solvent and mobile phase, although used interchangeably, and these are really not the same. The mobile phase composition changes as it moves up the plate, while the liquid originally placed into the chamber is the developing solvent. Only the composition of the developing solvent is known. So process number A and B, what I already described, this can both be experimentally manipulated by putting developing solvent soaked material, as for example paper towels, generously within the developing chamber, waiting long enough for the developing solvent to saturate the chamber with vapors before beginning chromatography, and allowing the sample spotted plate to interact with the developing solvent vapors without contact with the liquid solvent, also called preconditioning. The process point number B and C, we can modify. On the other hand, this can be effectively stopped by placing the second TLC plates at a distance of one or a few millimeter facing the chromatographic layers of the analytical plate. This is called the sandwich mode of operation. The further an equilibrium according to point number A and or point number B has been established, and the less different the components of the mobile phase in their sorption behavior, the less important will be the point number C. In well-saturated chamber and with preconditioning, the secondary fronts are rare, but secondary fronts are prominent in the sandwich mode. with the exception of very polar components like water, methanol, etc., the constituents of the developing solvent that are preferentially absorbed from gas phase may be pushed ahead of the real solvent front during chromatography. This results in RF values being lower in saturated chambers and particularly on preconditioned layers than in unsaturated chambers and sandwich configurations. Because of these possible complications from process number C, the development in the sandwich mode or in an unsaturated horizontal developing chamber works best with single component solvents or mixtures where the behavior of the different components are very similar to each other. It is important to understand that TLC development proceeds in the majority of cases under non-equilibrium conditions, and all parameters must be maintained the same to obtain reproducible results. Development chambers are available in a number of different geometries. Chamber type and saturation play a dominant role. This also means that the precise RF values may be different in each chamber even with the same developing solvents. No chamber is uniquely good, but in some chambers the relevant parameters can be better controlled. The flat bottom classical TLC development chamber shown previously in a figure in this book, in the margin figure, is used under condition of partial or complete saturation of the tank atmosphere with solvent vapors. The degree of sorbent pre-saturation cannot generally be controlled in such a chamber. In a twine trough chamber, the floor of the classical chamber is modified with a partition of low height. Only one of the trough may be filled with solvent to reduce solvent consumption. In addition, with one trough filled and the plate put in the other trough, the plate may be preconditioned. The development does not begin until solvent is put in the trough the plate is in. Development must be stopped when the maximum the solvent front can reach has been reached or earlier. If not stopped, the analytes will continue to move and the resulting RF values will be erroneously high. Optical monitors that alert the operator with the solvent front has reached some preselected height are available and prevent such overdevelopment. More sophisticated development chambers are frequently used with HPTLC. The horizontal developing chamber is a versatile development tank that provides reproducible results. In this device, it is possible to spot the samples on opposite end of a plate. The chamber contains a solvent trough at both ends. Developments and sample application can be from one end or both ends. When it is in both ends, then after the sample spotting, the plate is laid face down on edge of the solvent trough, and development began simultaneously from both ends. This doubles sample throughput, provided the migration distance in double-ended development is enough for the intended separation. The horizontal chamber is suitable for developments in unsaturated, saturated, and sandwich modes and can be used for preconditioning of plates. Fully automatic developing chambers are available and provide superb reproducibility. Not only operator intervention to begin chromatography after chamber saturation or plate preconditioning is not needed, the activity of the layer prior to start of chromatography can be set. After chromatography, the plate is rapidly and completely dried. With a twin throw chambers, a salt solution that provides for some constant preselected humidity during development can then be put in the second throw. In HPLC, the gradient elution with solvents of increasing or decreasing polarity is rarely carried out on a silica gel stationary phase. Once a polar solvent is used, time for recondition in the stationary phase can be prohibitively long. With certain eluent, the stationary phase may also degrade irreversibly. But in TLC, the situation is different. The stationary phase is not used multiple times with multiple samples. In addition, while whole column imaging has been occasionally demonstrated, the separation in HPLC is visualized by an external end column detector. There are no opportunities, as for example, to stop chromatography when constituent A has reached a certain position in the column. This is not the case in TLC. Especially if the sample contains components that range widely in polarity, the principle of automated multiple development is of great benefit. Automated multiple developments, in short name, is AMD. The plate is developed repeatedly in the same direction and stopped when the solvent front moves a preset distance. The solvent is then completely removed and the plate dried in situ under vacuum. The next development is done with a less polar, that means weaker solvents, but each successive run progressively extend the distance in a pre-programmed manner. The solvent front is allowed to move before development is stopped. In this way, a stepwise gradient elution is achieved. The combination of focusing effects and gradient elution results in extremely narrow bands with widths of approximately 1 mm on an HPTLC plate. For a separation distance of 80 mm, this means that up to 40 components can be baseline resolved. Finally, as Constant, Gordon and Martin showed for paper chromatography as far back as the year 1944, the TLC can be carried out in two dimensions, even in a manual format. A square TLC plate is used and the sample is spotted at one corner of the plate. After development of one solvent system, the plate is turned 90 degrees and developed with a second solvent system. The separation space then occupies the entire area of the plate. The great resolved power of the 2D TLC method has many applications, especially in the areas of biochemistry, biology, natural products, pharmaceuticals, and environmental analysis. Now I'll talk about the TLC plate visualization detection of the spot. A visibly colored substance can obviously be readily seen on a white TLC plate. Indeed, one of the most popular demonstrations of a TLC separation involves spotting a TLC plate with a black marker pen and separating the components of the black ink, which invariably turns out to be the mixture of a number of different easily distinguishable dyes. A fluorescent analyte can also be readily visualized by examining the developed plate under long, that means around 365 nanometer, or short, around 254 nanometer wavelength UV light. The reverse technique is sometimes used. The TLC plates are available with a green fluorescent marker bound to the stationary phase. In this case, under UV illumination, the non-fluorescent analyte are visualized as dark spot. Instrumental visualizers that provide uniform shortwave UV and longwave UV or white light illumination and are equipped with a digital camera to take either transmitted or reflected light's image are commercially available. Software is supplied that can perform blank image correction and can decode the image in terms of spot intensities. In TLC, analytes remain stored on the plate post separation and can be chemically treated prior to visualization or quantization. The objective of such treatment may be to change otherwise invisible substance to visible, or to improve detectability, as for example form a fluorescent derivatives, or to detect only a certain class of substance by a selective derivation reagents. In contrast, in other instances, it may be desirable to detect all sample components with comparable intensity. The mode in which the plate is exposed to the derivation reagent controls the uniformity of the derivatization process, and hence the accuracy of any quantitation carried out post derivatization. Gas phase derivatization, such as exposure to iodine vapor, can be carried out uniformly. Iodine vapor interacts with the sample components either chemically or by dissolving in them to produce a color. Liquid phase reagents are more commonly used. For example, amino acid and amines are detected by treating the plate with a solution of ninhydrin. Blue purple spots are ultimately produced after heating. Another common but destructive technique for organic compounds is spraying the plate with a sulfuric acid solution and then heating it to char the compounds and develop black spots. The two common modes for exposing the plate to a liquid reagent are spraying the reagent on the plate or immersion in the reagent. Reagent sprayers and spray cabinets that confine the aerosol droplets within to prevent inhalation toxicity. So reagent sprayers, immersion device and specialized planar heater for such applications are commercially available. Whenever possible, direct immersion is to be preferred because greater homogeneity can be attained. However, immersion and withdrawal must be performed smoothly. Dedicated immersion device can do this reproducibly at control rates. Now I'll discuss about the quantity measurements for TLC. Once it was common to scrape the spot to be quantified, the extract the material with a suitable extraction solvent and measure the extract spectrophotometrically. Those trying to make quantitative TLC measurement today are invariably using HPTLC and making the measurement instrumentally. Photographic imaging and software-based densitometry is straightforward and has the advantage that the entire plate can be imaged at once. But the limitations of present camera limits this to the visible wavelength. Variable wavelength reflectance-based densitometric scanners are available commercially and covers the entire 190 to 900 nanometer range. Broadband light sources are used with a monochromator, a slit of adjustable length and width then controls the spatial resolution of the scan. Each chromatographic track is scanned at a time and measuring the diffusely reflected lights. Background corrected absorption spectra for any desired spot can also be acquired for identification of the analyte as well as selecting the best measurement wavelength. In principle, diode array based TLC scanner as well as fluorescence scanner should be feasible. This, as well as transmission based TLC densitometry, have been repeatedly demonstrated in research publications. However, such instruments thus far have not been commercially successful. With the increasing popularity of matrix-assist laser desorption ionization mass spectrometry, that means which call them in short MALDI-MS, then the TLC-MS interface are now available. Similarly, bioluminescence is now a popular assay to determine, for example, toxicity of substance. The detection systems specially to measure bioluminescence on TLC plates are also available.